Leaders are influencers, and it's nearly impossible to maximize your influence when you're being dragged down and distracted by crippling anxiety, overwhelming stress, and private doubts and fears. We're unlocking the secrets to being fully present, expanding our potential, and growing our wisdom. Welcome to the Calm and Confident Leader Podcast with your host, Jason Stonehouse. Jason is the founder and lead coach at Life in Process. He helps professionals and leaders conquer anxiety and fear so they can maximize their potential. And now, grab something to write with and engage in today's episode.
Well, hey, everybody. I want to welcome you to this episode of The Calm and Confident Leader. This is Jason, and man, I just love being able to hang out with you. I love being able to talk leadership, talk stress, talk anxiety, talk about how we can be more emotionally healthy and really just be better leaders from the inside out. So much of our leadership tends to be focused on what we can do externally. It's all about our performance. It's all about how we look. It's all about the image. But really, where real leadership and lasting, sustainable leadership happens is from the inside. And so this whole podcast and really all of my work at the Calm and Confident Leader is really about creating healthy leaders from the inside out. And so I'm excited to be able to share with you this episode because we are going to actually pick up where we left off on an interview that I did with Britt Frank, the author of The Science of Stuck. And as I mentioned on the last episode, it is my favorite book of 2022. I would highly recommend you purchase it and get it because it will help you as a leader. It will help you in your relationships. It will help you on a personal level. And so I just think it's going to be a great resource for you. So pick it up. But we're going to get to that interview here in just a second. I just want to remind you that the Calm and Confident Leader is housed at calmconfidentleader.com, calmconfidentleader.com. And we have all kinds of things constantly being updated over there, as well as stuff about the coaching if you want to get involved in a coaching relationship. Also, brand new online courses are going to be appearing there frequently, so I want to make sure that you check that out. In fact, you actually aren't getting all of the content from this interview because some of the content I'm actually saving and only releasing for the online courses. And so it will be a bonus feature, part of the online courses, because Britt and I talk a lot about self-care on this episode, and that is going to be actually included in a part of our Self-Care for Busy Leaders online course. So you can find out all that content at calmconfidentleader.com. All right, guys, here is some more with Frank. Here's a little bit. Several of my clients feel like they have an endless to-do list, and whenever they accomplish one thing, they end up adding two or three more, or better said, at least a lot of my clients will tell me others will add two or three more to that to-do list. And so some of them, you know, because maybe they don't have another language for it. I was listening to you on another podcast and you were talking about how you don't like that word procrastination, but this is the word that they use, is to say this list of to-dos is so overwhelming and I just feel like I procrastinate on them. So can you speak to what might be happening in situations like this? And then maybe a little bit on how to overcome that inertia that a lot of my leaders feel?
Sure. And I don't like the word procrastination because it's not descriptive. So Procrastination, you're not doing what you want to do, what you're supposed to do, what you know you should do. And now you feel bad. Great. That gets us nowhere. Just like I like the word activation instead of anxiety because it's descriptive. Procrastination is deactivation. It's your system is stuck in a freeze response. Again, there's a nerve in your brain that when it gets overwhelmed, it goes, alarm, alarm, shut the system down. And that's called, if you're like a science nerd, a dorsal vagal shutdown, or just a freeze response or deactivation. But if you know that procrastination is a physiological issue that needs a physiological solution, like we'll go back to the car metaphor. If I'm sitting with my car has no gas. I can sit there and ponder the fact that it has no gas. I could make 10 calls to supportive people and talk about the fact that there's no gas. I could journal about the fact that I have no gas, but it's like, the problem is not in your head. Like, we can think about it. You can blame yourself for why the car ran out of gas. But it's like, if you want to solve the problem of an empty gas tank, you need to get out and push the car or get a can and fill up the tank. So procrastination, what's wrong with me? I hear this too from leaders. I know what I'm supposed to do and I'm just not. And I'm like, God, what's wrong with me? And then there's this imposter syndrome thing. And then there's now I feel guilty because I'm procrastinating. Okay, let's start with the problem's not in your head. You have a nerve. It got dinged. I don't know why it got dinged. It doesn't matter why it got dinged. It did. Now you're in shutdown. So if you are in a deactivation state, the solution is to upregulate, and there are tools to do that. But none of them are mental, and none of them are just think your way forward, because you can't think your way out of a physiological response anymore. You can think your way out of a stomach ache. It's sure. Like, stomach, stop hurting. You know, body, stop throwing up. It's like, if you eat poison food, you're puking, because that's what right. your body's supposed to do. Right. So we need to work with the problem. Yeah. So, okay, you're procrastinating. Great. Let's start with what's real here. You have only 24 hours in a day. And if you have been given 80 hours worth of things to do in a 24-hour period, you're going to have to triage this, which means you're going to have to let some things fall to the ground, which sucks. But again, it's what's real. What's real is that for a lot of people, their to-do list is never going to get to done. And you get to be sad about that. But, you know, as a functional adult human who's in charge of a lot of things, this expectation that you're going to do everything is not in any way reflective of the reality. And so if you want to be as optimized and productive and maximized and all of those things, you have to start with, you're not going to do it all. Sorry. Like, that's a bummer. So which things are going to get undone? And let's commit to that. Let's be tactical and strategic. You're not going to do it all. So right. What's most important? But if people think I have to do it all, they're going to go into freeze. And then they're going to do a whole lot of nothing. So we have to, again, commit to what's true here. What's true is your assistant's out because they have an illness. And your parents are aging and need your care. And you have 5 teenagers who are all out of control. And you have 25 things on your to-do list. You're not getting it done. So fine, let's take the morality and the judgment and the shame off of it and say, what are your choices? What's most important? And how are you going to get it done? That will get people moving a lot faster than, I just hate that I procrastinate. I just hate that I'm not doing. It's like, that's not helpful.
Right. Okay. And when you say prioritizing, you could say, hey, that's not going to get done in this 24 hours, but it might get done next month, but it's not getting done this month, for example. Is that what right. you're also alluding to in that?
Yeah. And I okay. hear people say, it has to get done. It has to get done. I'm like, cool. Then put that at the top. Like, but you're going to have to make some decisions in nothing, you know, especially for people. And I get this, who are committed to excellence. I want to do things not perfectly, because that's not
right.
achievable, but I want to be committed to excellence. Great. Well, part of being excellent is knowing you're not going to get everything done in an excellent way. Some things just need to be good enough and some things need to go undone. And, you know, everyone hates it when I say that. And I'm like, great. But like, the way I'm talking about is going to create momentum. Your thing that you're doing is spinning you around and creating inertia. So we have to get you out of your head and into a place where you can get some motion. It might be that you need more help. It might need that you need to outsource some things. It might need be that you need to adjust your expectations. It might be that you need boundaries. You know, when people talk about, I need work-life balance. I'm like, no, you don't. You need work-life boundaries. But that's a whole nother talk.
Yeah. Well, actually, that was where I wanted to go. Just listening to you talk, I was thinking, I know you have a whole section on boundaries, which I loved how you synthesized it. So talk a little bit about that, because I know as leaders, we feel this desire to serve others. We feel like, you know, part of our job is not just managing ourselves, but also managing all of these people who need things from us, who have these expectations of us. So how do we discover our boundaries? Maybe might be the first thing. And then how do we, I know a totally different topic, but how do you then communicate those boundaries?
So here's good news for all the business people listening. And I am a therapist giving you this news. You do not have to be a therapist to your people. Your people do not need you to be their therapist. And I really feel for a lot of leaders of people who are being told by the zeitgeist, we have to be trauma sensitive and we have to have safe spaces and we need to be mindful of people's triggers. And I'm all about being decent, civil human beings. But somewhere in this dialogue, leaders got the message that they are now supposed to therapize their people. And not only is that not helpful, it's not even useful, because people on a team who have a job to do don't need to be diving into their feelings. They need 3 tablespoons of validation, 1 teaspoon of support, and then some solutions. But as a business leader, if you are expected, or if you believe you're expected to therapize your people, you're not going to be able to do the things. And so as a therapist, I'm saying we don't want to trauma dump at work. You can care about your people without taking on all of their things that are happening. You can be a broker. Hey, there's a resource here that our company offers. Or hey, here's a list of places you might consider. But leaders are supposed to be brokers of mental health, not the purveyors of it.
Ooh,
and
I like
a lot of people don't know that. Yeah.
So then when I do get an expectation put on me that there's something in my gut that says, I don't think this is my role, I don't think this is an expectation that I should have, that's where that word boundary comes in, right? And then I'm going to speak to that as far as, how do I speak to that person who's saying, hey, boss, I need you to do blah, 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 or I really need this thing. What do we say in those situations?
And people think validation is a synonym for agreeing. And you can validate someone all day long and not agree at all with them. I mean, look at how skillful parents deal with children. You can validate, I know you don't want to go to bed. I know you don't want to brush your teeth. I know you don't want to go to the doctor. Nevertheless, you're doing it and we're going. And it's very similar with leadership. You can a lot of people think if I validate, I'm somehow co-signing on this expectation. Hey, I get where you're coming from. It makes a lot of sense. And I get that you really don't want to do this, or you really can't. And I know it's a bummer. I think this idea that leaders need to like rah-rah people into compliance and productivity, there's a lot to be said for saying, wow, that's a bummer. And I have nothing for you. And I just want you to know, I see that what's being asked of you is really hard and you're having a hard time. And if this is something outside your ability to manage, we have some resources for you. But validation goes so much further than people give it credit for.
Wow. I love that. That's a really cool way. I haven't heard that as a way of, immediately there, a lot of the literature that's written is really, how do you say no tactfully and all of that. But, you know, the idea of saying, I'm going to validate, as opposed to just, here's all the reasons why I can't meet your expectation. That's not what they need to hear at that moment. What they need to hear is, do you see me? Do you know, like, are you willing to understand and respect where I'm at? And I know you probably can't fix it. I know, I wish you could. I wish you could be my savior, but you can't be my savior. I just need you to validate that. So I love that, because not enough people are saying that. It's all about how to tactfully say no and all of that kind of thing. So yeah, I love that. Okay, talk to me a little bit about overthinking, overanalyzing, the paralysis of analysis. What do we do if we find ourselves struggling to sleep, dealing with overthinking, our mind, we just can't shut it off?
Sure. And there's a lot of ways to approach that. But whatever the thing is, and whoever you are, don't ask why. Don't ask why. All right, you're struggling to sleep. Why am I struggling to sleep? I don't know. I'm sure we can look at your ecosystem and find a really good reason, but that's not helpful right now. Why am I struggling to sleep? Not relevant. So then again, it's, well, where in your body do you feel that? You know, like you can't sleep. That's easy. So then what are 3 choices available to you? If sleep is not available to you, it's not available. And you can sit there and spin. Oh my God, I need sleep. And I've done this. Oh my God, I have 4 hours left before I have to get to work. Oh my God, now I only have 2 hours left to get to work. Ah, not helpful. It's like, if sleep's not available, what is? What are 3 choices available to you when you are feeling the insomnia thing? And then of those, pick one. And then tomorrow we'll come up with a better menu of options. You know, what are your resources? Is it physiological? Is it medical? Is it environmental? We can figure all that out later. But in real time, so like what we're talking about is, when you're not in the middle of 3 a.m., I can't sleep. Like, that's not the time to come up with your plan. That's the time to be like, all right, maybe I can move to a different room and read instead of watching my phone at, you know, blasting in my face, looking at bad news and then asking, why can't I sleep? So what's available to you right now? Pick one, go. And then when daylight comes, which it always will, then we can figure out some bigger strategy type things.
And then we can address why is the, then we can address the why or not. on the next time.
Okay. And we can address the why. You don't address the why while the building's on fire. You address the why once the fire's out.
I love that. So I just gave one of the maybe reasons why is the overthinking or the overanalyzing. I can't turn my brain off. So let's take the sleep piece away and just speak to that issue of why we overthink or why we overanalyze. Is there, maybe not why is the right, but what do we do with that overthinking or that overanalyzing that our brains tend to go in as leaders?
Well, part of the overanalyzing is good. There's wisdom if you're a leader into making sure that you cover all your bases. I would never tell someone in a position of leadership or an entrepreneur, you shouldn't really worry about that. You know, just don't think about that. And again, it's making sure our expectations match our reality. If the reality is that you're doing a startup, like if that's your situation, you better well be overthinking every possible angle. And again, that's a season. There's a season for overthinking and analysis paralysis. And again, not only do we want to find the benefit of suboptimal behavior, we also want to find the wisdom. That doesn't mean that you need to just feel like, you know, awfulness and just be resigned to this. But there is wisdom in some of the things that we call suboptimal behaviors. So what's the benefit? What's the wisdom? And then where are our choice points? Maybe you're overthinking because you need a coach. Maybe you're, and I don't care how good you are at what you do, everyone needs someone better than them to help guide them to the next level. Like, every therapist should have a therapist. I do. Every leader should have some sort of mentorship, maybe not every week or every month, but if you don't have someone speaking into what you're doing, you're going to get stuck. So like, maybe you need that, but there's wisdom in overthinking. So let's start by validating the wisdom in it, and then we can trim the fat.
Okay. Okay. Again, the primary listeners here are high capacity leadership positions. What would you say specifically to this group as we start to maybe wrap up our conversation here? What would you want to say specifically to high capacity leaders? Let me just ask that as part one, and I'll give you part two in a second.
As it relates to them or as it relates
to
them?
Yeah, just any, like if you had, and I know many of your clients are, high capacity leaders. So if you could have a room full of high capacity leaders, what would be some of your counsel, some of your direction to those folks?
So I would first say the problem isn't what you think it is. Like whatever you're coming to me, whatever you're coming to your coach with the problem, I would ask yourself, is this the problem or the symptom? When we mislabel the symptom as the problem, I check engine lights like really problematic. So I need to go into my car and cut the wires so that light goes off. Well, cool. But like, that's not your problem. So your problem is not what you think it is. And to solve a problem, you need to accurately name the problem. So if you could start with the assumption that perhaps this problem is not what I think it is, that'll expand your capacity to problem solve and to find your way to solutions. So there's that. Okay. And then I would say, you know, mental health is good for the bottom line. This is not just to be a good person because it's good to be a good person. Like this is like rational self-interest and mental health, and a company full of people who are regulated and not over or underactivated are going to be more productive. And feeling safe and seen is going to create a settling, which is going to create productivity. Motivation is not the thing that happens before change. Motivation is the thing that happens as a result of taking steps. So like I say, motivation is the, not the antecedent, it's the consequence. It comes after. So don't wait till you feel motivated, and don't encourage your people to, you don't need to find motivation. If you can find nervous system regulation, if you can deal with these physiological things, motivation is the natural byproduct of a regulated system. So you already have it all. You don't need to find it. It's just, we need to create physiological cues that will help you access it.
What can you say, just help me define physiological cues. What is that? What do you mean by that?
I'm so unmotivated. I don't know how to get myself motivated. You're not unmotivated. You're in a deactivated shutdown. Your nervous system shut down. Like your problem isn't motivation. It's nervous system shutdown. So we need to figure out how to upregulate your system. And there are tools for that.
So like I would say, okay, what are my three choices now that I'm in this deregulated or whatever demotivated place? What are the three choices I can make? And when you talk about choices, you talk about people, place, and things. Is there somebody I can talk to? Is there something I can, right? Is that what you mean by people?
Yeah, because okay. What's going to happen to anybody is, I feel this. Why do I feel this? What's going on? I shouldn't feel this. It's like, we need to take the story off the symptom. If you can take the story off the symptom and then just ask, okay, where in your body does the symptom fall, on the stuck on down or the stuck on up? And then we can intervene and then we can analyze it later. So don't worry about why, and don't worry about what this means about you, and should you be a leader, and who are you to be doing it? It's like, that's not helpful. Let's start with what we can, where we can get movement. And once we get movement, then all those questions tend to get answered.
Okay. All right. So we want to look at those choices and take a step, even if it's not the best step, because that's what I have a lot of times with leaders is like, yeah, there's a lot of things I could do, but what's the best thing I can do? You know, and I'm like, you don't need to worry about that. Just get some motion happening. You know, I always say it's easier to steer a car that's driving rather than one that's in park. So we got to get the car moving so that we can start steering it to where it needs to go. So,
yes. And sometimes you need to make the wrong decision to get that. I mean, think of your GPS. If we're sticking with driving metaphors, your GPS doesn't start until you get into drive. And so it doesn't matter if you take the wrong road, it'll adjust your route. And so with taking actions and making decisions, we need to make decisions that aren't going to create like a perilous situation. It's not like, I guess I'm going to try taking out this organ instead of that organ. I'm not talking about that. But like, it doesn't matter if it's the right decision or the best decision. Make a decision, and then the feedback you get, you can use that to course correct and adjust. So making the wrong step forward is preferable to taking the best step in your head. Like, just start moving. We'll adjust accordingly.
Last question I have is the issue of pressure. I have a lot of leaders who say, you know, I have all these expectations at work, and then I have a marriage, and then I've got kids. And as a leader, most of the leaders I work with are just wired to serve. Like, they want to be helpful. They want to be able to do all the things, and they want to be able to maybe save the day for all of those different places, for their spouse, for their kids, for their work. How do we work on all of those pressures coming at us? Is that where we get back to that realistic or that reality check? What do we do with that?
So, I mean, I could take that a lot of places. First of all, people who are givers tend to forget that part of giving requires you to have a full cup, and you can only give what you have to give. And so if you're draining yourself in service of others, you're no use to anyone, including yourself. And so there is a requirement for you to fill your cup, not because it's selfish, but because it's part of being an active member of a community, of a family, of a company, requires you to be at full speed. And a phone is not going to stay charged if you don't plug it in every once in a while. And so people have this expectation that I just give and give and give and give. I'm like, sorry, you're human. I'm so sorry that you are a human, and this is part of your design. But self-care is not selfish. Self-care is essential if you're going to be a giver. You have to have something to give to be a giver. The other thing I would say is, it's profoundly unkind to save people from things that they can be and should be doing for themselves. Because if I save you, that's me telling you you can't do it and I don't believe in you. Sometimes the kindest thing you can do is not serve somebody and cheer for them on the side while they take care of it themselves. Sometimes.
So the work-life balance, which I guess is part of what my question is alluding to, how do I navigate that pressure? Because work is where I'm getting that income. But if I work like crazy and I lose my marriage and I, you know, my kids don't want to talk to me, whatever, that's not good either. So how do I deal with that tension, I guess?
And the expectations thing is really part of this, because you can't set boundaries if you can't set boundaries. Like, there are some, like, if you're not the owner of a company, let's say you're working for someone, and the expectation of that person that you work for is that you work 80 hours a week, then you don't have a choice. You can't set a boundary there. And then if your spouse is not willing to accept that, and your kids are not old enough to understand why you would choose to do that, you might have some hard choices to make. Because balancing all of that is not an option. And boundarying that, you're not going to tell that person, I don't answer my email after 8 p.m. on weekdays. It's like, if they expect you to, then your choice is going to be tough. It's, if I stay, this is the cost, this is the benefit. And sometimes those really, really hard situations require us to do things we don't want to do. And again, that's part of the reality of the situation. If you don't have the opportunity to set boundaries, you have some hard choices to make.
So, and the hard choice that you're maybe alluding to is, maybe we take less income. I do a different job because my family is going to be now the higher priority at their season or the age of the kids or whatever. I might make that hard choice to say, yeah, I could be making a lot more money, but I'm choosing this because they don't expect me to answer emails after 8 o'clock or for using your example. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. Or it might be that you work with your spouse to say, listen, for the next year, this is what I'm choosing to do. And then here are the benefits of this. But if you don't have a partner that's willing to sacrifice time with you in service of the greater good, and sometimes there's wisdom in that, again, there's some hard choices to make. And what I hear is, well, I don't like that. It should be that I can do all the things that I want to do. It's like, but you can't. It should be that I do, you know, you're not only do you not have time to do all the things that you need to do, we're never going to have enough time to do all the things that we want to do. Like, as humans, there are many, many things available to us. I get sad in libraries because I'm like, oh my God, look at all this information that I will never, ever, ever have time to even know exists. Because part of adulting and humaning is making choices. And for every one yes, there's going to be 10 things we have to say no to. Mm. And you get to be bummed out about that. You don't have to be happy that you're saying goodbye to those 10 things. That doesn't diminish the value of the thing you're saying yes to, but humans don't want to grieve. Well, I won't say humans. Many people in our culture don't want to grieve because it's uncomfortable and painful, but sometimes that's the reality of the situation.
Wow. Wow. This has been so, so rich. Thank you so much for your time. How can folks connect with you if they want to connect? And I assume your book's available wherever books are sold. But anything else you want to
say? Yes, you can buy The Science of Stuck wherever. Well, my website is scienceofstuck.com, and you can find me on LinkedIn or Instagram. It's just my name, at Britt Frank, and come say hello. And yeah, I love talking this stuff because it really does make life better when you have accurate information. And a lot of us are being handed misinformation about mental health and wellness and motivation and procrastination. So good information gets you moving a lot faster.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, Britt. We will talk to you again.
Thank you.
All right. Well, how good was that? Man, I wish we had more time to even chat, but hopefully I'll be able to get her back when her next book comes out and we can learn some more information from that. But as I said, there are some additional content, additional information from that interview will all be available, included in as a bonus with our Self-Care for Busy Leaders. It is our online course, and you can find it at calmconfidentleader.com. Calmconfidentleader.com. Love to have you stay in touch with us over at the website. And also, if you have not done this, why don't you subscribe to this podcast so that you don't miss any of the great content that we have coming out regularly here on the podcast. And let somebody know that you found this valuable. Share this particular episode. This is a rich one, and it really covered a lot of questions that continue to come up for a lot of my clients in my coaching situations. Remember, if you see someone who is a calm and authentically confident leader, it's most likely that they are living from the inside out. Talk to you on our next episode.